wanted to ask you about the process of making the paintings that are in the Town and Country exhibition. So Jupiter, Tree, Blue Comet, and Eclipse.
My personal experience of the fire was very flight or fright or whatever it is, that kind of thing where you're not actually emotionally registering anything. They were trying to get both cats into a thing and one of them won't go. And you're thinking, I got to take some stuff and I don't know what it is. And all the time, you can hear these explosions, which are the trees exploding, and you can see little bits of fire coming in through the trees that were on the other, on the eastern side of the house. So it was just very, it's hard to put any words to it. And then Gordon decided he was going to film it, because of course he's a media guy. And then we're saying things, oh my God, that's the Jade, which was a nice, amazing shot. And it was hugely on fire, so registering. Oh. And anyway, we finally did get out of it. But it would just re-emerge further along the road. And along the road, you just saw these little packs of guys, presumably the wives had gone to married or somewhere. The guys were staying with their trucks along the road, watching down where the fire so had got to their house yet. And of course it did eventually get to nearly everybody's house, except the mayor's.
And the juniper tree was right in front of your house.
Yes, it was planted by the guy that built the house.
So. Is juniper particularly, does it have particular flammable properties?
It's absolutely, totally resinous. It just went up. And when we came back a few months later, you could see where it had exploded at the base. It was all white, you know, interior of tree, hadn't burned or anything. It just exploded. But yes, they're very, very resinous. Everything in them is. So, but what I was going to say is, when you asked me what was the process, just in very muddled, not in good shape. And and so then I finally got up and said, well, I wanted to do landscape. All I've got to do is set it on fire. So that's what I did. And so it really did take 1.5 years of just baking the idea, I suppose, slowly marinating it. I don't know, whatever that process is.
Had you ever painted landscape before?
No. I'd done drawings constantly. But I'd never really painted, especially, no, I hadn't. I bought fluorescent paints, and that was totally exciting. It changes every other color, and it's amazing. All the rules are just out the window once you put fluorescence in, which I really liked. I liked not knowing what's going to happen. So it just sort of did things all of its own, which I suppose people who spray paint graffiti artists know all about, but I didn't. Well, you know, I went to art school in Soho, and so I went to the National Gallery a lot, but we were also expected to go to the old Tate. The new one wasn't there yet, but other galleries, the portrait galleries just around the corner from the National Gallery and things like that. So, and when I just couldn't handle class anymore, I'd either go looking at the shops on Oxford Street, or go down to the National Gallery usually, because it was free. And there were a lot of churches around there too. But that's what I looked at, and they're all, you know, El Greco and all of that. They're all just kind of huge dramas. And at that time, what I also loved, and there were quite a few of them in London, those old guys that go around, there's never women, it's always old guys with a bike or a cart or both or whatever, with all those messages from the Bible about the end is nigh. And so I just loved those. I loved them. There used to be one in Vancouver, actually. He was quite, often was at the art gallery outside. So the whole idea, because I'm a very catastrophic thinker, I can always think of the most catastrophic outcome for any situation, and it usually involves, you know, flood or earthquake or something. So I watch those endlessly on YouTube. I love telling stories. I love reading stories. When I was very, very young and still at school, a park keeper gave me a swan's egg. The swans all belong to the Queen, you know that, don't you? So they had a special person to look after them. And this old guy was called Sid, and he was the park. We crossed over to go to school from the boarding house, and one day he gave me a swan's egg. I thought, oh my goodness me. I mean, I was a country kid. So I knew how to blow eggs, so I went into the toilet, stuck a pin, whatever it was, in both ends, and then I realised there was blood and stuff inside this. There was a baby swan inside there. It was awful. I didn't know that. Sid didn't know that. I guess I don't know. It had been abandoned, probably, this nest. But they weren't supposed to give them away to itinerant school kids. But anyway, so then I thought the only way I can deal with this, because it seemed so awful, like an abortion, a stillbirth. I mean, that's what it was. So I did a little tiny comic of it. You know, I was supposed to be sort of going to a school that was going to turn me out as sort of posh. We were never allowed to look at comics when I was a kid. We could read, you know, classics. So not comics, never saw them, never saw any TV or anything like that, but there wasn't TV in that. So I didn't know about that as an art form or as a popular, you know. I just didn't know anything about it, but I knew that you could tell a story and you could put pictures along. So that's what I did. I don't know what happened to it. I'd love to see it. I was probably about 13, 12 or 13 years ago. Comics still by then, especially in England, were just, oh no, it's just vulgar, my dear. But when I looked at them later, like Dennis the Menace and things like that, it wasn't the one that they have here, that cute little kid. It was a really ugly little boy, and it was the English version of it. And he was really awful. But I loved Dennis the Menace. And then I saw Ronald Searle's drawings of St. Trinian's, and also another one called How to Be Top, which was about a boys' school. And they were horrible, these kids. The teachers were vile. The kids were just awful to them. They were always hanging teachers up from, you know, from balconies and dropping them on the floor and stuff like that. It was just what I wanted to do because I hated school. I thought it was awful. So that's what happened. I just sort of saw these people. I thought, this is so cool. But it wasn't. I mean, it wasn't approved of in any way, not even by the pop artists who, you know, were teaching at the art schools at the time. And those, I had collected all the books, and they're gone too. For some reason or other, somebody introduced me to a guy called Jack something or other who used to fly kites down in the park here. So it was when I was in Vancouver. And he just said, what do you do? And I just said, illustration. So he said, well, why don't you come over and show me some of your illustrations and we'll see if we can get you some work. The Sun, right? So I developed a sort of a more and more sort of confrontational style and more purely black and white at The Sun, believe it or not. And and then the Georgia Strait, and then other magazines and things like that around here. And then in London and in New York, because I used to do a lot of work for the Village Voice. So I guess it was that. And the first comic I did was that Christopher Isherwood poem. What is it? The common cormorant or shag lays eggs inside a paper bag. The reason you will know, no doubt, it is to keep the lightning out. But what these unobservant birds have never noticed is that herds of something bears will da-da-da and steal the bags to hold their crumbs. Or will come with buns and steal the bags. And the last image was of the bears emptying out the cormorant's eggs, crashing onto the ground. What a good poem that.
And loops back to your swan egg story.
Yes.
Wow.
No, I've never realised that before, but you're right. I go, like most people, I'm sure, from thinking, oh my God, I can't believe this, to how do we deal with this? Because it's one thing just as a joke, predicting that the planet is going to destroy the human race, but when you keep seeing evidence of it happening with pandemics and things like that, oh my goodness, maybe I'm right. But also with animals, because we're encroaching on their territory so much, and people are so stupid about them that they get gobbled up by bears and everything. It's astounding. I'm just reading a book, actually, which I bought a long time ago, after the fire, How to Die and the Age of the Anthropocene. But kind of amazing because he goes through all of the, you know, the sort of classic stories, Gilgamesh and all of that, and just sort of, we all knew, and we have known, and we've been told. We just keep saying, not to us, we'll figure it out. Well, anyway. But I don't think we will. I think that it's hard to see the Californian fires that just occurred, was it last fall, after the fire that we endured, it makes that one look like a cup of coffee at Starbucks. It's nothing. And it's hard not to believe that the fire will win. And COVID. Because of my personal history of abrupt endings and change of location and things like that, I believe that change of location is probably going to go on happening.